From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, Ukrainians hopeful the new president will restore peace. Pope Francis meeting with Muslims, Jewish, and Orthodox leaders. The Thai coup and some analysis. Plus, the case of racist comments by a U.S. sports team owner. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. Ukraine's military launched airstrikes on Monday against separatists who had taken over the airport and the eastern capital of Donetsk. Shelling was heard from the airport and dense black smoke rose into the air. Fighter jets and military helicopters seen flying overhead. AP reports this appeared to be the most visible operation of the Ukrainian troops since they started a crackdown on an insurgency in the east last month. Several vehicles full of dozens of heavily armed men were seen arriving in the area next to the airport. The fighters said they belonged to the Vostok Battalion, a pro-Russia militia. Many flights to or from Donetsk Airport were delayed or canceled on Monday, and Ukraine's new president-elect Petro Poroshenko had harsh words for the pro-Russia gunmen fighting across the eastern part of Ukraine, comparing them to Somali pirates. He promised on Monday to negotiate an end to the pro-Russia insurgency in the east, saying he was willing to begin talks with Moscow. Now we go to Kyiv, where VOA's Al Pessin was out among the people for the reaction to Mr. Poroshenko's apparent landslide victory in the country's presidential election on Sunday.
People strolled Independence Square as normal Monday morning, posing for photos in the early summer sunshine. But politics was not far from their minds.
I think maybe he will act more strongly in the East now. There is no one who was ready to take full responsibility for this. That's what is needed to restore order.
A top priority is to enter the European Union to help our country get off its knees, to return Crimea, to return Donbas, Luhansk, all of the East, and to solve all the other problems in the country.
The most important thing is to establish peace between Russia and Ukraine. The aggressor has to admit that he is guilty and remove the troops.
Independence Square is still a place of pilgrimage to honor those killed during protests that ousted the former president. Sunday's voting was something of a triumph after months of upheaval, including Russia's forcible annexation of Crimea and the Russian-backed separatist violence in the east. Most polling stations in that region remained closed during the election. But the chief election observer from the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, former Lisbon Mayor João Soares, says the results should be respected anyway.
This election proved the democratic spirit of the people of Ukraine, who had the opportunity to express their will at the ballot box and seized it in high numbers.
One of the senior American observers, former Congressman Mark Green, told VOA the votes from the East would not have changed the outcome.
Here what we saw was, in every place where it was physically possible, elections were held, conducted, and done so free and fair. And that's the vast majority of the country.
Both Green and Soares spoke of the commitment of Ukrainians to hold a fair election in very difficult circumstances, but Green said it's important to remember that the election was only the beginning of a new effort to address the country's many problems. Al Pessin, VOA News, Kyiv.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Pope Francis ended his trip to the Middle East with a series of meetings with religious and political leaders in Israel. VOA's Scott Bob reporting now from Jerusalem.
Pope Francis, on the final day of his Middle East trip, prayed and laid a wreath at Jerusalem's Holocaust Museum. He visited the grave of the father of modern Israel, Theodor Herzl, met with the two chief rabbis of Jerusalem, and paid courtesy calls on the Israeli president and prime minister. Earlier, the Pope met with the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem at the Haram el Sharif, saying a visit to the Holy Land would not be complete without such a meeting.
Cari fratelli.
Dear friends, from this holy place, I make a heartfelt plea to all people and to all communities who look to Abraham. May we respect and love one another as brothers and sisters. May we learn to understand the sufferings of others.
The pontiff also prayed at the Wailing Wall, also called the Western Wall, one of Judaism's holiest sites. Rabbi of the Western Wall, Shmuel Rabinovich.
For too many years, religion was a source of division. From here, from this site, which is sacred to you, to me, and to millions more around the globe, I call on the people of all religions to fight hatred and anti-Semitism.
Rabbi Arthur Schneier from the United States praised the Pope's visit.
Unfortunately, there are those religious leaders who seek to divide. The fact that the Pope is here visiting Israel, and also the fact that the Bartholomew, the Ecumenical Patriarch, is here, is really a milestone in interfaith relations. That's the way to go.
Lucy Bikbikian from Jaffa liked the Pope's message of peace.
He wants to bless this land. It needs to be blessed. It needs peace. We love peace.
On Sunday evening, Pope Francis met with Eastern Orthodox leaders at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, on the site where many believe Jesus Christ was crucified.
Standing as pilgrims in these holy places, we also remember in our prayers the entire Middle East, so frequently and lamentably marked by acts of violence and conflict.
Patriarch Bartholomew, the spiritual leader of the world's Orthodox Christians, lamented racial discrimination and religious extremism in contemporary society.
In the face of such conditions, the message of the life-giving tomb is urgent and clear. Love the other, the different other, the followers of other faiths and other confessions.
The two leaders then embraced. The meeting marked a similar encounter between their predecessors 50 years ago that launched reconciliation after centuries of conflict between the two churches. Scott Bobb, VOA News, Jerusalem.
Egyptians on Monday began a two-day election for their next president, with those polls at the polls showing overwhelming support for former army chief Abdel Fattah el-Sisi. VOA's Elizabeth Arad has more now from Cairo.
Those taking part in Egypt's election for a new president were in a largely festive mood Monday, cheering on their country and the man widely expected to win the race, former army chief Abdel Fattah el-Sisi. Voters expressed optimism the process would go well.
So that Egypt lives in a new era of democracy and freedom and solidarity for all the forces of the Egyptian people.
Sisi himself voted early, saying Egyptians were coming out to write their history.
The turnout, God willing, will be beautiful and great, God willing. Long live Egypt.
The man who last year helped oust Egypt's first freely elected president, Mohamed Morsi, is seeking a mandate, much like the one he used to crack down on Morsi's Muslim Brotherhood. But the campaign against the Brotherhood, as well as subsequent bans on pro-democracy forces, has gained Sisi enemies and led many to boycott the vote. Heavy security highlights the continuing tensions. Some voters showed little sympathy for the disenfranchised.
They have certain rules, not to follow this or that, not to do this or that. This will be good for them, and then they can have their freedom.
Such an atmosphere is compounded by Sisi's near total backing by Egyptian media and a muted campaign from his sole competitor, Hamdi Sabahi, prompting questions about the overall fairness of the election. But foreign observers Monday said the voting itself appeared to be proceeding smoothly.
There was a bit of a delay at the entrance, but I think so far so good.
Polls closed Tuesday evening with few surprises expected in the results. Elizabeth Arrett, VOA News, Cairo.
Jordan has expelled Syria's ambassador, prompting Damascus to retaliate by barring Jordan's top diplomat. Spokesperson for Jordan's foreign ministry said Monday that Syrian Ambassador Bajaj Suleiman had been given 24 hours to leave the country. In a statement carried by the state-run news agency Petra, the spokesperson said Suleiman used his platform in Jordan to level what she called unfounded accusations against the kingdom and its allies. Syria quickly responded to Jordan's decision and announced Monday that it had made the Jordanian chargé d'affaires in Damascus persona non grata. Jordan officials say the diplomat is not currently in Syria. The UN Refugee Agency says hundreds of refugees in Syria and in Jordan are being denied cancer treatment because of a lack of funds. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency says the number of refugees with cancer is overwhelming health systems in Jordan and Syria. UNHCR's top medical expert, Paul Spiegel, tells VOA decisions on who gets treatment and who does not are made on the basis of cost. He says helping the largest number of people with the limited amount of money on hand is usually the determining factor.
For the colleagues themselves that have to deal with this, it is extremely, extremely difficult. And we sometimes try to help them, to give them counseling. We have a standard operating procedure that can be shared with both the doctors and the refugees to say, this is what happens. And we do this in order to help the most amount of people. But no matter which way you look at it, it's a horrible experience.
A new UNHCR study tracks refugee cancer cases in Jordan and Syria from 2009 to 2012. It says the number of cases in the region is rising because there are more refugees and more people fleeing middle-income countries such as Syria. The UNHCR has set up an exceptional care committee which decides whether to fund expensive treatments. The study finds the most common form of cancer among refugees is breast cancer, accounting for almost one quarter of all applications in Jordan. Of 511 cancer cases, Dr. Spiegel says fewer than half were approved for treatment between 2010 and 2012. He says treatment is usually denied to patients with little chance of recovery.
So that the treatment would not actually prolong the life or prolong for a very short period of time, 6 months, and would be very expensive, to someone like this would be denied. Because, again, I know it sounds heartless and it's a very difficult decision, but with a limited amount of money, we can ensure that we can treat people where we can hopefully cure the cancer, or at least what's called a functional cure, so that they will have at least 5 more years and hopefully a lifetime.
Dr. Spiegel notes many hospitals in Syria have been destroyed or closed by conflict. He says it is likely many Syrians with serious health problems choose to leave the country more in hopes of getting treated for their illnesses than out of security concerns. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thailand, which has been racked by 6 months of political disputes and sometimes violent demonstrations, is once again experiencing a military coup, the 12th by the army in the last 80 years. The coup has drawn international criticism, with the U.S. Defense Department saying it is canceling ongoing military exercises with Thailand, as well as planned visits by U.S. and Thai military officials. Mark Thompson, director of the Southeast Asia Research Center at the City University of Hong Kong, tells my colleague Victor Beatty there is no question the military sides with the anti-government so-called yellow shirt protesters.
The military stepped in now for the third time, 2006 coup, then the behind-the-scenes effort to change the government, to unseat a pro-Thaksin government 2008. That was after the airport occupation and now. And each time the military has shown it clearly sides with the so-called yellow shirts, the traditional elites who oppose Thaksin, who are, you know, based in big business, the bureaucracy, the courts, and have support in the monarchy. This is a step by the military which clearly bolsters the anti-Thaksin side, and you can see that in the people who have been arrested largely from the government or supporters of the government or people who have expressed sympathy towards elected governments and the way in which the anti-government protesters have greeted this coup. This is what they've been calling for all along. So the military has stepped in a very partisan way. There's some ominous signs given the numbers who have been arrested Some reports it's up to 150, that this is a much harsher coup than the previous one. And there's even some worry and discussion that the Thai military could be thinking along the lines of the Egyptian military last year, that it would harshly repress a popularly elected government, in this case, the pro-Thaksin forces.
How is this going to impact U.S.-Thai relations?
Adversely, obviously. The U.S. has been very critical, and I think criticisms will only mount, particularly if high-ranking government officials like the former Prime Minister Yingluck Shinawat, the sister of Thaksin, it continues to be held in a location we don't know where it is. She has no contact, apparently, with the outside world. And if this continues, there are other high-ranking government officials, redshirt leaders, pro-Thaksin redshirt leaders, academics, journalists, and so on. So this is a real worry. And I think one interesting aspect is within the pro-military yellow shirt traditional elite camp, there's been growing disappointment with the U.S. And there's been some discussion, although it's hard to tell at this point how serious it is, about a military government even moving more toward China, because U.S. criticism suggests that a Thai military government can't look anymore to the U.S. Whether China, of course, would be interested in such overtures is unclear. This is speculation at this point, but it represents an interesting development in Thai politics, because historically, these traditional elites who the military clearly backs have historically had close ties with the U.S. Now that relationship is very much frayed, and U.S. criticism of the coup is disappointing these traditional elites.
Mark Thompson, director of the Southeast Asia Research Center at the City University of Hong Kong. He was speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty.
From the ordinary to the extraordinary, you never know what in the world will happen next.
The world is watching with grave concern as Russia has positioned its
military. You should not allow anyone to deprive you of your right to determine the future.
We are using this against terrorist groups coming from Turkey.
With a landing on
and civilians. Sponsored by, no, we are not killing civilians.
This with all that's happening, VOA News works to keep you up to date every hour of every day. So when you want to know what's new, you know what to do. Tune in your radio or click on the internet. World News on the hour, every hour, or at your convenience at voanews.com.
Here in the U.S., President Obama has paid tribute to America's war dead as the United States marked the annual Memorial Day holiday. VOA's Michael Bowman has our report.
Hours after completing a whirlwind trip to visit U.S. troops in Afghanistan, President Barack Obama laid a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier in Arlington National Cemetery just across the Potomac River from Washington. Moments later, Mr. Obama noted the ultimate sacrifices made by generations of Americans from the nation's founding to the present day.
Everything that we hold precious in this country was made possible by Americans who gave their all. And because of them, our nation is stronger, safer, and will always remain a shining beacon of freedom for the rest of the world.
The president paid special tribute to the widow of a soldier who went missing during the Korean War and who waited more than 60 years for her husband's remains to be found and returned for burial in the United States. Mr. Obama noted that 2014 marks the final year of combat for American forces in Afghanistan and the 150th anniversary of the founding of Arlington National Cemetery. Next month marks 70 years since U.S. troops stormed the beaches at Normandy, France during World War II. Michael Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
Here in the U.S., controversial National Basketball Association team owner Donald Sterling has a day in court later today to respond to the league's charge that he damaged the NBA. Sterling's racist comments already have led to a lifetime ban from the game and a $2.5 million fine. VOA's Dave Bird reports the case is far from over and could drag the league and other team owners into a public fight nobody wants.
News reports say that Donald Sterling has transferred his ownership stake in the Los Angeles Clippers to his estranged wife, Shelley. The reports, by sources not authorized to comment on the negotiations, said that Shelley Sterling is negotiating the sale of the team but wants to retain a minority interest. That creates a complicated mix for the NBA. Commissioner Adam Silver has banned Donald Sterling for life after his recorded racist rant against African Americans, including former NBA star Magic Johnson, was posted on the internet. Sterling has been accused of damaging the league and causing it to come into disrepute. So far, Sterling has refused to pay the $2.5 million fine, thus violating the NBA Constitution and the agreement he signed as a team owner. But a prolonged court fight could be bad for the league as well. Roshini Rajkumar is a licensed attorney and the author of Communicate That, Your Toolbox for Powerful Presence. She told VOA that the last thing the NBA wants is a drawn-out fight with the Sterlings.
This certainly does not help the NBA in any way. It reminds us, you know, every time one team gets a strike against it, reporters dig up all the other bad things that have happened in the NBA, so you're seeing those anecdotes come back to life from the past couple decades because of this Sterling controversy.
Technically, the Clippers are owned by the Sterling Family Trust in the names of Donald and Shelley Sterling, and Commissioner Silver said the league's actions are against Donald Sterling only. But players want both Sterlings to lose any control of the team. Star Miami Heat player LeBron James said the sooner the Sterlings are gone, the better.
I mean, it's very important. We don't want this lingering around our sport. I mean, it sucks that it happened, but you know, as players, owners, and everyone associated with this game, there's no need for it. So, you know, the quicker it get done, the quicker we can move on.
But moving on might not be as simple as getting rid of Donald Sterling. Last week, controversial Dallas Mavericks team owner Mark Cuban told Inc. magazine that if he saw a black kid in a hoodie and it's late at night, I'm walking to the other side of the street. Cuban said he would also avoid what he called a bald white guy with tattoos on the street. Cuban has not said how he will vote in Sterling's case, but many observers defended his comments because the Mavericks owner said that to charge someone else with racism while harboring racist thoughts makes him a hypocrite. Roshini Rajkumar says a prolonged court fight with Donald Sterling would not be good for the league's image.
I don't know that a lot of owners are going to want to open themselves up to the depositions that could follow if they decide to forcibly oust him, and then his legal team might come back at them and fully open up the lids of every other team and other possible racial behavior or misdeeds of the other owners.
LeBron James says that players are hoping the situation is resolved quickly.
I mean, we all hoped that it would go fast, but we also know the judicial system too as well. And you know, litigations can go on for time and time and time, so you had to, obviously you had to be patient with that. But, you know, we're all optimistic that it can go fast.
Donald Sterling has to respond to the NBA's charges by Tuesday. He also has the right to appear at a June 3rd hearing and to make a presentation to the league before it votes whether to terminate his ownership. A three-quarters vote of the league owners is needed to strip Donald Sterling of the Clippers team. The NBA says the same is true if Shelley Sterling owns the Clippers. In Washington, I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
And also in sports news, Ireland's Shane Lowry topped the list of U.S. Open qualifiers a day after missing out by a shot and qualifying automatically for next month's championship. He shot rounds of 3-under par 69 at Walton Heath's new course on Monday and then posted a 5-under par 67 on Old Course for an 8-under par total to finish a stroke clear among the 14 qualifiers in the starting field of 105 players. It is the second time in five attempts the 26-year-old Dubliner has been successful at Walton Heath in qualifying for the U.S. Open. The double European Tour winner has secured his biggest paycheck and finishing runner-up to his old friend Rory McIlroy in Sunday's concluding BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth, where a win would have been Lowry, giving him a void teeing up at Walton Heath. Many thanks, everyone, for joining us today here on the Voice of America for International Edition. Always good to have you with us. And a reminder, you can find us on the Internet anytime at voanews.com. And we hope you'll stay tuned. The latest world news is coming up shortly. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineers, Zahra Abuzaid and Jim Harmon, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. Have a nice Tuesday.
This is Today in History. On May 27, 1703, Russian Tsar Peter the Great, having recaptured land controlled by Sweden, ordered construction of a city on the site of a former Swedish fortress along the banks of the Neva River. That city would become St. Petersburg and for two centuries would serve as the Russian capital. In 1905, the Japanese fleet began a battle that destroyed Russia's East Sea Fleet in the Straits of Tsushima. It was the decisive battle of the Russo-Japanese War and marked the first time that radio transmissions played an important role in a naval engagement. It was also the first defeat of a European power by an Asian nation. On this day in 1941, the British Navy sank the German battleship the Bismarck in the North Atlantic near France. British Prime Minister Winston Churchill had ordered the sinking of the German ship after it had managed to sink the HMS Hood, the flagship and pride of the Royal Navy. More than 2,000 crew members were killed in the sinking of the Bismarck. And on this day in 1957, Brunswick Records released That'll Be the Day, a song that would become the first hit for Buddy Holly and the Crickets.
Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yes, that'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're gonna leave, you know it's a lie, 'cause that'll be the day when I die.
Buddy Holly died in a plane crash in Iowa when he was just 22 years old, but his body of work is considered among the most influential in rock music history. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.
Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yes, that'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're gonna leave. You know it's a...
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
This is my fifth trip to Asia as president, and I plan to be back again later this year, U.S. President Barack Obama said recently at a young Southeast Asian Leaders Initiative town hall meeting in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, because I made a deliberate and strategic decision that America will play a larger, more comprehensive role in this region's future. From America's earliest years, when the first president, George Washington, sent a trade mission to China, through last year, when the aircraft carrier that bears his name, the George Washington, helped with typhoon relief in the Philippines, America has always had a history with Asia. And we've got a future with Asia, President Obama said, because Asia is home to more than half of humanity. Asia will largely define the contours of the century ahead, whether marked by conflict or cooperation, by human suffering or human progress. This is why America has refocused our attention on the vast potential of the Asia-Pacific region. We have been moving forward on our rebalance to Asia by opening ties of commerce and negotiating the Trans-Pacific Partnership, by increasing our defense and educational exchange cooperation and modernizing our alliances, by participating fully in regional institutions like the East Asia Summit, building deeper partnerships with emerging powers like Indonesia, Malaysia, and Vietnam, he said. Our strategy is more than just security alliances or trade agreements, he said. It's also about building genuine relationships between the peoples of Asia and the peoples of the United States, especially young people. We're launching a new Young Southeast Asian Leaders Initiative to increase and enhance America's engagement with young people across the region, he continued. Together, we want to make the Asia-Pacific more prosperous. Together, we want to make the Asia-Pacific cleaner and more secure. Together, we can make this world more just, President Obama said. We need to build together in partnership with all the nations and peoples of the region, especially young people. That vision is within our reach if we're willing to work for it.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.